For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. You know, a local commercial real estate service firm in Hartford called CBRE told The Current that, according to their estimates, only around 5% of office workers at large private companies in the Hartford area are regularly working in their offices. Now, COVID vaccine or no COVID vaccine, that begs the question, what if that trend becomes permanent? With us now to share his insights on what the future holds is Victor Kalinog, head of commercial real estate economics at Moody's Analytics. Sir, I saw you quoted as saying that the, quote, genie is out of the bottle. What did you mean?
Guess what the pandemic did? It literally forced many of us to start working from home because of the lockdown policies. And so now a lot of employers have basically shown their employees that, yeah, we do have the infrastructure to allow you to get your job done, even if you're not at work. And so that's the genie that's out of the bottle. And I'm wondering, even as we return to work, what does the future look like for office space? I think a lot of CEOs and companies today are seriously rethinking how much space they actually need.
Well, I quoted you that figure of 5% of office workers at large private companies in the Hartford area. Only 5% are working regularly in their office. In terms of occupancy of these offices, and from occupancy, you talk about mortgage payments and rents for those spaces, and then from there, business for ancillary businesses like restaurants and local shops and things like that, and tax revenue for cities. I mean, where does that number have to be for there to be really profound long-term change?
What we want to distinguish is physical occupancy versus economic occupancy, right? So in other words, sure, a lot of people aren't back in their office space, only 5% according to your estimate, but it's actually quite likely that these office tenants, right, the employers who are actually paying the rent, have not defaulted on their rent obligations. They probably negotiated for some kind of relief, but by and large, these office buildings are still in general, as far as we can tell, in terms of loan delinquencies and trends, you know, it's a different story for hotel and retail, right? But for office buildings in general, there haven't been a ton of high-profile defaults because a lot of these office tenants are locked into long-term leases, the average of which is 9.1 years, right? So these are long-term leases. A lot of offices, unless, of course, you're a business that's gone bankrupt or out of business completely, you're still paying your rent. So you might not be physically occupied, but you're still economically occupied. That's the good news. The bad news is you've got a lot of ancillary businesses, as you mentioned, things like restaurants nearby, things like, I don't know, if you have food trucks, the kind of food truck culture that's super prevalent in markets like New York and San Francisco, right? You are completely dependent on a workday that has office workers in their offices and coming down between 11 in the morning to 3 p.m., right? And so that is the immediate short-term hit, which is why I think a lot of small businesses, though they're receiving support from the government right now, might come back the way we thought they would before all of this went down and lasted as long as it did.
Let's take a look at the market in Connecticut. You take a look at some of the major employers here, Raytheon, Stanley Black & Decker. They have much more of a manufacturing component, but then you have the insurance industry, Aetna, the Hartford, and others, who have a lot of jobs that could foreseeably be more easily done at home. Given the type of economy that drives Connecticut, is this area more susceptible or less susceptible to the far-reaching economic impact of work from home if work from home becomes more permanent?
The most comprehensive study that we've found that tried to quantify this shows that most large urban areas have between 50 to 55% of jobs able to be done remotely. For the Hartfords of this world, the insurance industry, as you noted, will be more on the risky side if more of those service type jobs can be done remotely. And then when you've got the manufacturing side going, you're not exempt either because of an age-old trend of potential offshoring, right? So this isn't related to COVID necessarily, but demand for office space has actually been evolving for the last 30, 40, 50 years, precisely because even manufacturing in the U.S. is going through a much slower evolutionary process. I'm thinking Hartford is a little bit more on the riskier side because of the insurance industry's relatively large presence in the market.
Break out your crystal ball. Let's look down the road, you know, five to nine years. Here in the Hartford area and just around the country, what is the likelihood that we will see hulking edifices of the past that are largely unoccupied? Or maybe to what degree are we looking at these big glass office towers turning into urban farms or Amazon warehouses or something to that effect? Or to what degree will we see no change at all?
Let me talk about something kind of hopeful, right? If I put on my forecasting hat, we're expecting about a 6% decline in office rents over the next 18 months, okay? 6% doesn't sound like much, but remember, that's for the overall metro. And for comparison, office rents only fell, quote unquote, by about 4.5% from 2008 to 2009, which was a pretty rough time, right? Mm-hmm. Hartford's also very interesting because from 2001 to 2004, this was post 9/11, if you'll remember, post tech market crash, we had about four straight years of negative effective rent growth in Hartford. That was also the time that we were putting a lot of product to market, around 1 million plus square feet, okay? By comparison, the kind of good news is that we really haven't built much in Hartford over the last 10 years. There might have been some build-to-suits, but that's owner-occupied, and you should not include that in the rental market discussion, right? So what I'm basically saying is, number one, the pricing system is actually kind of interesting because if you've got a 6% decline in rents, which is pretty significant, then, you know, employers might just say, let me not move out then and let me not give up the space because now it's actually cheaper, right? And so rent declines actually help stabilize your occupancies because of that interplay. With that said, what we're projecting on the vacancy side is for the 2019 18.2% vacancies for Hartford to go up to around 20.5%, thereabouts, 21%. Mm-hmm. So that's a 300 basis point increase in vacancy. There's going to be some pain. It's not going to be 100% vacant, but there's an equilibrium that we'll reach. Again, assuming that there's some kind of vaccine that's introduced, you know, and made widely available by the second quarter of next year, and we return to some semblance of normal. The downside there, of course, is if employers do realize, you know what, I really do need less space, and they start giving up space, then you got to throw out those projections out the window and start tracking employers and where they're going. Because are they even staying in Hartford, right? Are they moving out to nearby suburban areas? Is that the new thing? And that's really hard to forecast right now.
Are downtowns dead?
I don't think the final word is out on that end. I think, actually, if I put on my optimist's hat, and I know this sounds strange coming from an economist, right? I suspect that there's a lot of pent-up demand out there from people wanting to do things that they used to be able to do but are unable to do right now. And the big question is whether or not that means a return to repopulating downtown, both as residents and as workers. It's all anecdotes at this point, right? You've got newspaper articles about U-Haul being busier than ever in the New Yorks of this world, moving people out. But really, the official numbers about where households are moving or whether or not they did it for the summer but are now back for the fall and school season, they're actually not out yet. And there's some good anecdotal evidence of a lot of relatively young people still wanting to favor an urban lifestyle, living in downtown, yes, right? Because of everything that it offers to, I guess, young folks who don't need as much space in suburbia. And so I wanted to kind of share that somewhat half and half note because, yes, right now it looks like a ghost town. But I wonder, is there pent-up demand there if and when we get over this crisis that'll basically repopulate the downtown? I just wanted to I remember 9/11, right? There were predictions made about no way will downtown Manhattan ever recover again. There will be a permanent outflow of employers and households. Same thing was said about Washington, D.C. What if another plane crashes, right? I know this virus is very different, and the duration of the crisis has made it really painful for a lot of people. It is different, but it's still a very much a wait-and-see story about how downtowns will fare.
So we're winding down, and thank you so much for your time. City planners, state planners who are listening to this interview, give them a to-do list as to what to do to prepare for this environment that we're embarking on.
I think you're just going to have to budget for lower assessments of property value, in which case the kind of tax take that you're going to get is at risk as well. You're going to want to take a look at distressed debt and distressed sales to see whether or not any reassessments of value are appropriate. And then finally, I'd be more concerned really about making sure that the, you know, crime and safety situation in cities and downtowns are under control, because that's not going to help if the neighborhood really spirals towards a less safe perception, right? And you're just not going to bring a lot of people back even when we get over this crisis. So budget for the risks, prepare for a few more months through the summer, probably of next year, of constrained economic activity. And don't write downtowns off just yet. I suspect that it'll depend on the area, but the worst predictions about COVID-19 and the office sector, put all your pants. We are never going to work in offices anymore. It's always just going to be via Zoom or Microsoft Teams or Google Meets. I suspect that won't come true either.
And finally, drill down that advice, that to-do list for particularly vulnerable industries like the hotel business, like the hospitality or the restaurant business.
If you are in hospitality, a leisure and hospitality, that super sector that does include restaurants and food services, prepare for another rough 1 to 2 years at the very least. I believe airlines are budgeting for a very, very slow 5 years. And so, you know, I think let's not forget the potential upside of pent-up demand if and when this truly disappears. But if the new normal is masks, if the new normal is constrained travel to different places because you have to take tests before you leave and once you arrive, then this will constrain economic activity and the appetite for travel and gathering in public places. So just, you know, buckle your seatbelts, because it's going to be a pretty wild ride for the leisure and hospitality sector for at least the next 2 to 5 years.
Victor Kalinog, head of commercial real estate economics at Moody's Analytics, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much, John.